started today is February 11th, 2010. This is the State Senate Resources Committee. With us are Senator Huggins, Senator Wagner, Senator French, and myself, Wilkowski. We have three bills that are up today. Senate Bill 203, Cook Inlet Gas Storage Facilities. Senate Bill 104, Stand Price State Wildlife Sanctuary, and HB 20. And I'd like to call Senator French on SB 203. Could you either... Oh, thank you, Senator French.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Please put yourself on the record, and let's hear about your bill.
I'm Senator Hollis French. I represent State Senate District M. And with me is, and I'll let her introduce herself.
I'm Kate Herring, staff to Senator French.
And Mr. Chairman, thank you. I know the committee's busy, and this got pushed over to here from the first meeting this week. I appreciate that. We gave you an overview of the bill, and I think we covered that the three main ideas here are, one, make sure we've got some gas on hand in times of shortage during the winter. I don't think you can find anybody, you know, involved in the energy issue in South Central Alaska that doesn't say we need gas storage. From Mayor Sullivan's task force to the RCA to NSTAR to the utilities, you know, there's a universal agreement we need to do this. And I know there's other ideas out there about how to go about it. We think this is sort of a nice targeted way to create some incentives for private industry to invest the perhaps $100 to $200 million necessary to build a well. And so there's a tax credit in there for investments in that direction. We also put the well under the jurisdiction of the RCA to prevent any price gouging that might take place. You know, you can imagine that if you buy gas in the summer months at $4 or $5 an MCF and you put it away, and then suddenly in the winter, you know, in a great shortage and there's a brownout and everyone's cold, it's 20 below, you know, there might be some desire on the part of the utilities to get a little more for that gas than they should. So the RCA would be looking out for us in that regard. And so that's kind of the sum and substance of the bill. I've got Ms. Herring, who's worked very hard on this issue with me today. Behind us is Don Bullock, who helped draft the bill. And Mr. Bullock, I think, is prepared to answer questions that go beyond our pay range. And so we'll just put ourselves to you and the other members of the committee to answer questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator French. And appreciate your accommodating us. We introduced the bill last week, and we got tied up behind a few others, so I appreciate you coming back today. And I know you have other people that you've brought with you and other people who are online as well, so thank you. And thank you to the people who've waited, especially people online and Mr. Bullock as well. So any questions for Senator French or for Kate? Okay, seeing none, do we want Mr. Bullock? Yes, Senator Wagner.
I got one question, and I don't think I have the answer, and you may not either. How many companies, how many different geological structures at this time are being looked at for gas storage? By how many companies? Do you have any idea?
Through the chair, Senator Wagner, that's a great question, and I don't. And just, you know, and probably the best example of my lack of knowledge is when we began to work on this bill, you know, in July, September, October of this year, July, August, September, October, I left a month out. Suddenly, between the time that we got the ball rolling and the time that the bill debuted, Sings appeared. Cook Inlet Natural Gas Storage Company appeared, you know, sort of, you know, they launched their effort. They're down the tracks. They're negotiating a deal, I believe, right now with NSTAR. And my communications with NSTAR sort of led me to believe that they'd be reluctant to comment on this while they're in the process of negotiating that bill. So whether there are other deals out there beyond that, I don't know.
Yes,
the reason I brought that up, I had talked to somebody that they said they thought there was probably up to three different companies, two already existing doing business in Cook Inlet, and then TransCanada. So I think we need to be cognizant of that when we look at this bill, because if those other companies do storage too, we're not looking at one storage unit and forgiving the taxes on it. We're looking at three, or up to possibility of three.
Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. What if the storage was CO2? Would it be applicable? Should it be modified to accommodate CO2 storage?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, you know, clearly this is a dialogue. My view is we should focus on natural gas because that's what we can burn to keep warm in the winter. But your idea is intriguing.
I don't know. It just mm-hmm. I just thought of it. I mean, because people are talking about where to put CO2 in. And, you know, in our neighborhood. So, anyway.
Yeah, interesting. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Senator French, if you want to do you want to come back up?
I'll come back up, and yeah, I'll let my staff and Mr. Bullock.
We'll call Mr. Bullock up, and appreciate you again, Mr. Bullock, coming and sitting through our last meeting. I know you're a busy man.
Marathon and Union.
If you could put yourself on the record.
Good afternoon, members of the committee. My name is Donald Bullock. I'm one of the attorneys in Legislative Legal Services, and I'm here to answer any questions you might have on CS for SB 203, Virgin P as in Peter.
Great, thank you. Are there any specific questions for Mr. Bullock? Yes, Senator French.
I'll ask one just because I know we've gotten a couple of memos, both from DNR and DOR, regarding their thoughts about the bill. And one of the points they made, Mr. Bullock, was on the DNR letter. It's, I think it's right behind the fiscal note. And in the second paragraph from the bottom, they were concerned about allowing taxpayers to obtain credits simply by transferring assets among themselves. Could you speak to that and whether you see that as a concern and whether you think that the bill addresses that?
Well, there's two things to consider in that case. First of all, on page, starting on page 3, line 30, and going through page 4, line 9.
We just recognize Senator Stevens has joined us. Senator, we just started on Senate Bill 203.
Thank you.
Particularly on page 4, starting in line 2, it says how they forfeit the credit. And they forfeit the portion of the credit that accrued in previous years that may be carried over. So any credits that's left, they would lose it if they dispose of the investment, if they dispose of the facility, or take the investment out of service, or they fail to use the storage facility primarily for the storage of gas for sale and delivery in the state. So that covers the person that gets it the first time. The second person, again, but remember, this has a limited time period. It's only, I think, through 2013. So all these transactions would have to be happening in that short time frame. And then it's a policy question, is do you want to encourage the person that buys the facility from the first one? First guy loses the credit, second person buys the facility, and they're basically doing the same thing that you want. They're putting a gas storage facility into service to get the results that you want. So an option, if you wanted to limit it, would be to say that for one facility, the credit may only be applicable the first time it's acquired, or set a dollar amount on it, put other kinds of parameters on that. But this is a new thing. The options are up to you.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Any other questions for Mr. Bullock? Okay. Senator French, did you want any other testimony out of Mr. Bullock?
No, they presented several concerns. I think most of them have been addressed by the bill, but that was one I just wanted to get a bill of record on. Thank you.
Okay, great.
I have one thing that wish to consider, and I talked to your aide before, and that is the first section of the bill adds this gas storage facility to something that's regulated by the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. And this issue was before the committee or the commission in December, and they said they didn't have jurisdiction, so section 1 adds it. But in that section, right now as it's written in the bill, it only applies for gas storage for the purposes of a distributor, somebody that takes it like NSTAR. And what you could do is just make it storage for any, for example, electricity is on page 1, line 12, that reference. If you expect that electrical utility would be storing and using gas, then you may want to broaden the new language.
And that would, if I could, through the chair, that would cover the possibility of new entrants into the market, as Senator Wagner mentioned a few minutes ago. You would define that you would make certain that new entrants would be regulated in addition to the one that we sort of see on the horizon now.
Right. I mean, there are, as I understand, there may be some facilities that are already in place, and that's something else you need to figure, because the purpose of this is to give the Regulatory Commission of Alaska something else that they can control the price of on the way to determining what rate consumers are going to pay. So that issue applies to both existing facilities and future facilities because it's going to be reflected in the rate. Without that, if new facilities, gas storage facilities, were the only ones that would be regulated, then you would have kind of a discrepancy between ones that the gas utility would have to negotiate the price over with independently and then come to RCA and say that this is what it's going to cost us, figure this into the rate. And then the newer facilities, which would be subject to RCA jurisdiction, would be looked at by the RCA. The rates would be fixed, and so the RCA controls both the storage costs as well as the rate that the utility would charge. So again, it's a policy call. It's how you want to deal with it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions? Yes, Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Don. Good to see you. In the Gulf Coast now, there's close to 4 trillion cubic feet of gas in storage, like we're talking about here. And as I recall, there's also now some companies that have a LNG re-export permit. That may not be the correct term, but they can because it was imported. So I guess my question is if somebody brings gas up Cook Inlet and we have enough caverns there, under this provision, could they pump it into the ground and be available for us or anybody else? Or they could re-export it when the market was right. Because it appears to be a feasible concept because a lot of it in the ground in Lower 48 on the Gulf Coast.
Let me just look at the bill, Matt, because I'm not sure if there's a restriction that it has to be Alaska-produced gas in this facility.
While he's looking at that, Mr.
Yes,
Chairman,
Senator Wagner.
Just a real brief memo. You know, I ask about the tax, and says this memo was a response to Senator Wagner's request, a written statement by the department. As currently written, SB 203 would have no impact on Kenai Peninsula Borough's property tax revenues.
Thank you.
So, clarified.
Thank you for getting it on the record.
Through the Chair, in answer to the question, in the definition of Cook Inlet gas storage facility that starts on page 4, line 11, it's a storage facility for the storage of gas that is produced from the Cook Inlet sedimentary basin and designated for sale and delivery in the state. So if it was transshipped or if it was produced somewhere else and brought in, then it would not be subject to the tax credit.
Mr. Chairman, one other question. I'll scratch that. Never mind. Thank you. Thank you, okay. Mr. Bullock.
Other questions for Mr. Bullock? All right. Thank you, Don. Appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
We also have online Joanna Bales, Robin Wilson, and Jim Greeley from the Department of Revenue for questions. And I guess I'd open it up at this point if committee members have questions for Department of Revenue. I don't intend to move this bill. I've discussed that with Senator French. We're going to hold this bill. It's an important one. We want to work it over, make sure it is the right policy call, and make sure that we're addressing this the right way. But we do want to have an opportunity for members to ask questions for Department of Revenue. So I guess I'll open it up, Senator French.
Thank you. I'm sorry, who's representing the Department of Revenue?
We've got
Ms. Bales.
Joanna Bales, Robin Wilson, Jim Greeley.
Okay. I am in receipt of a memo from the Department of Revenue. It's an email dated January 4th, 2010. And I wonder if one of the folks on the line can maybe summarize what some of those concerns are so we can build a record here and either have Mr. Bullock or someone else respond to them. Did he leave? Did Mr. Bullock leave? Okay. Can you maybe go? Thank you. Yeah. Because I have a feeling that they're going to raise questions that I just need to have him respond to as anybody else. Thank
okay.
you.
Yeah. And if I may, this is Joanna Bales, the Deputy Director of the Tax Division. I'd like to just make a quick comment in response to Senator Wagner's notice of the memo that we sent to him. It's our understanding, and I just want to also clarify, that which CS version of the bill are we currently looking at for this hearing?
I'm glad you raised that, because yes. I have a note in front of me that we need to adopt the new CS. So
I'd move that we adopt /P, PAPA.
Yeah, /P is the latest version. Is there any objection to adopting /P? Seeing none, /P is adopted.
Okay, thank you very much. And I think what I just wanted to point out, that is the version of the bill to which our memo pertains. So I just want to make sure that we were working off the right version. And now I'll go ahead and let Robin Wilson, who's our corporate tax manager, go through those concerns that we have with the committee.
Thank you. And Robin, if you could put yourself on the record and give us your testimony.
Yes, this is Robin Wilson. I'm the corporate income tax manager for the tax division, Department of Revenue. Yes, the email to which you refer, sir, would you like me to go through each point or summarize it in general? What would be helpful?
Maybe you can just start by summarizing it. The bill will be held over, but maybe you can just at least put on the record your concerns so that the committee can be aware of them, and whether we get Mr. Bullock back to respond today or in the near future, at least we have sort of the stage set for a discussion of the points.
Yes, I think overall we noticed several places where interpretation could lead to a result that two credits could be claimed for one expenditure or one facility, and I don't know that sort of double counting was intended. And so, you know, for example, the bill allows a credit for the owner of the facility, but then it also allows a credit for the leasing of a facility. So both the lessor and the lessee could conceivably take a credit for the very same facility. So, I don't know about intent, but it didn't appear that was intended. There's a allowance for a capital investment with reference to cash expenditure or a payment due. So if one were to accrue a payable in one period and then pay at the next period with cash, you could conceivably read that as being allowing two credits for the same expenditure. So those sort of items where it appeared that you could interpret it and get two credits. So I think that it applies to the first couple of points that I had written down there.
And maybe I can just ask you about that one, because I'm not an accountant, but when I looked at your email and looked at that sentence saying, you know, you could double count a cash expenditure or a payment due, doesn't that imply a choice? Don't you have to pick one or the other to get the credit for the capital investment?
Well, you know, I might look at that and think, well, of course you have to pick one. But some people, you know, interpret statutes a little more broadly than others. And if I was sort of on the other side of the table, I would argue, you know, you have a choice there. And it says both. So, you know, you may say that it's perfectly clear, but it's a point that, you know, we looked at and said, if one was sitting on the other side of the table and wanted to be aggressive, one could read it that way.
And just, I mean, not to get too dragged down in the details, but how would you clear that up? What would be your suggestion for that language?
Well, I'm just sort of thinking off the top of my head, but, and Joanna, please jump in here if you've got an additional suggestion, but it seems to me that you could say an expense or an expenditure by itself, just some language that is just one, and if it was an expense that is, it's accrued, it would be counted once, it couldn't be counted twice, but this cash expenditure or payment suggests that either one is or both would be acceptable. Joanna, if you've got suggestions.
Yeah, and if I may, this is Joanna Bales. Just in terms of accounting, it is best just to say the expense, because that does have an accounting terminology associated with it as to whether or not it's an accrued expense or something that's actually been paid in a given year. An expense is generally considered just a one item. So it's just a clarification point. And we really wanted to get on the record, too, in case, you know, in the hearing minutes that the intent for this language is that you aren't going to allow a double dipping of a singular accrued or paid expense.
just so we all are clear, my intent would be you only get to count it once. And I'm pretty sure that's the intent of the, I don't see anybody disagreeing with that. But legislative intent's always tricky. You know, certainly I'd be happy to work with you to try to clear all these up. And let me just ask maybe more generically at a higher level, do you know whether the administration supports or opposes the idea of creating some tax credits for gas storage in Cook Inlet?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator French, this is Joanna Bales again. We have not, we don't have any position right now from the administration, so, but we are, have been tasked with working with your office and the Senate Resource Committee to ensure that if there's favorable, I mean, intent to push this bill forward, that, you know, we work together to get the best product possible. But again, we don't have a decision or a position by the governor's office.
And I understand, and thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And this is Bill Wilkowski, but let me just ask you this. I mean, does the administration perceive a need for a bill like this, an incentive bill for Cook Inlet storage? And I guess either someone on revenue, if anyone can answer that, or if we've got Kevin Banks here as well. That was one of the questions that came up last time. We don't want to incentivize something that's currently, that we think will be done without incentives, but does the administrative perceive a need for something like this?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, that might be a better question for DNR. They might know, but it is my understanding that we don't have a position from the governor's office, and you know, we will work on trying to get that for you.
Okay, thank you. That would be helpful for us. And Kevin Banks has taken the hot seat. So, Kevin, if you could put yourself on the record. And
thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Kevin Banks. I'm the chairman, the director of the Division of Oil and Gas, and the answer to the question. Your question is, I don't know. We haven't done the evaluation of these projects and looked at the kind of cost structure that they would be facing. And then also an unknown is how, what price they could sell gas or charge for the storage facility itself as a service to another utility. And so at the moment, the answer is we don't know.
Okay. And from my perspective, it would be helpful for me in evaluating whether we adopt this policy or not. Mm-hmm. If we did have some analysis, if you could weigh in on that. Do you foresee the ability to do that?
We can take a stab at it. I'm afraid that the information we have about these kinds of costs are going to be hard to find, I suspect. But let me get back to you with
you. Get some sort of assessment to us within, say, the next 10 days or so. That would be, mm-hmm. I think, really helpful from my perspective.
I will add that the three storage facilities that exist now in the Cook Inlet, one of which is on federal land, the other two are on state land. They are owned by producers. And the gas that's extracted from, stored in these facilities are mingled with their produced gas from other places and delivered to their customers without a separate charge made for storage. It's just part of the price, or in some cases a peaking price if that's when the gas is sold. So. There's an example which is very unlike what we think a third-party storage facility would look like and the kind of unbundled service that they would offer. So we're really talking into the dark here, I think.
Okay. Senator Wagner.
Yeah, I was going to, while you're up here, I might talk a little bit about the different types of storage as far as the geological structure of them. I think what Senator Huggins was talking about is mainly salt cavities, salt domes, and here we don't have that, and you don't retain all the gas in our structures like they do in the salt domes. Is that
through the chair, statement? Senator Wagner? That is one distinction. There are very large storage facilities in those kinds of salt dome caverns, but there's in the Gulf of Mexico, in the Cook Inlet. Storage will be in some sand-bearing or gas-bearing sand within a potentially a producing unit where the gas is nearly exhausted, the native gas is nearly exhausted, and so a horizon will be selected and gas pumped in, both to serve as a cushion to get the pressures up in that one structure, and then to have, I think we've referred to it as non-native gas in some of the language we've seen here, the actual gas that's stored. So you have a cushion gas and storage gas, and it's the storage gas that's coming in and out, theoretically. But all of the units in the Cook Inlet, or all of the storage, potential storage in the Cook Inlet, for underground storage like this, will be in old and existing gas fields that have produced for many years.
I'd like to recognize Senator Stedman has joined us. Did you have a follow-up, Senator Wagner?
No, okay. I just thought it'd be good to hear that.
Mm-hmm. Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just for clarification, producers that at peak demand divert gas out of could be a storage facility, are they eligible for the tax credit as we see it or not?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, for the three facilities that exist today, given the effective date and the date of December 31st, 2009 date for when things happen here, those three would not, certainly not get it. Now I'm going to take a step. The definition of a storage facility, I think in this bill, would have, would require that it be regulated by the RCA in order to get the storage or get the credits. And so there are situations where the existing storage, for example, as I said, those are not regulated in any sense that I think this is implying. Rather, as I said, a contract is entered into between a producer and a customer, an NSTAR or a Chugach. A price indice is set up, and maybe there are different prices for gas delivered at different times of the year, but gas that is supplied to that contract comes from all over the producer's assets, producing assets, including storage. And you don't see the distinction of where this gas is coming from. And similarly, you don't see what the cost of storage is embedded in that into that price either. Hope that helps. I think as we move forward, this I think is trying to provide an incentive for a third-party storage where the sponsor of the project is really a warehouseman and is letting other people use its facility to store their gas.
Thank you, Mr.
Okay, thank you. Great. Any other questions? Any questions for Department of Revenue? Okay, we're going to hold this bill, put it aside for now, and it looks like there's some little work that needs to be done on it. And thank you, Kevin, and thank you to Department of Revenue. All right, next up we have House Bill 20, Fisheries Loans, Energy Efficiency.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you. If you could just put yourself on the record, we'll see if there are any questions.
My name is Tim Clark. I'm staff to Representative Edgman. I was, in fact, under the impression that our bill was coming up last on the agenda today. I had meant to pluck him from the Energy Committee in the House, where he's now co-chairing. However, I think he'd forgive me if I continued without him, but he would like the committee to know that he very much appreciates your giving this bill your attention.
Before we move any further, there's a CS to this bill, and I believe the latest version is backslash C.
There's a CS policies bill. Oh. Just before we adopted it. You did adopt it.
No CS for this bill?
No.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
There was a CS in the House that has come before
okay,
this committee.
Okay. Great. Any questions on House Bill 20? Okay. Senator Stevens.
In going through the sectional analysis, could you comment on the eliminating the prohibition on people who've had loans in the past? Could you discuss that so we know exactly what we're voting on?
In the past, there was a prohibition preventing anyone who had or I should say, who has ever had a loan out under subsection A from becoming a borrower under the program in section B. This bill would eliminate that prohibition, however, only if the loan is for the purposes of improving energy efficiency on the vessel or in the operation. So that although it does open up the field to some extent in terms of potential applicants, it's controlled in that it only applies to energy efficiency improvements.
So. Mr. Chairman, that seems like a good step forward, and also in there, it changes the balance that fishermen can have to owe for this loan. Is that right?
The limits that are set in each of the programs, A and B, remain the same. However, the overall limit that a single borrower can have outstanding from the entire commercial fishing loan fund can be as much as 400, or that is the total that a single borrower can have outstanding from a combination of the two programs, A and B, can reach as much as 400,000. In the past, that was, or I should say in present statute, that's 300,000.
Did you have a follow-up?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. No, I just think that's a major improvement, and certainly support the bill.
Okay. Did you have a question, Senator Stedman?
Well, I'm just kind of concerned, again, on it possibly being too broad if we're going to target engines that we that we make it more specific. And I see there is an amendment sitting here. I think we might want to have some discussion on what we want to target.
Do we have Greg Winninger? Why don't you come up, Greg? Put yourself on the record.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Greg Winninger, Director of the Division of Investments.
Thank you. This issue continues to come up, and I think Senator Stedman raises a valid point. Do you want to re-ask the question, or did you understand the question, Greg, or the concern?
Through the chair, Senator Stedman. Yeah, there has been discussion about that. Currently, we have a regulation that's fairly broad in terms of what we can do there. Right now, under Section B of the program, we have the ability to make this type of loan, but for engines only. And that was done through a regulation, because under Section B, we had the authority to make a loan for improving a vessel. And so we were able to go through a regulatory process to provide a lower interest rate for that type of improvement. In the last year or so, though, there's been some suggestions from the industry that there are other types of improvements that also may qualify, or it may be advisable to qualify, like certain types of hulls and certain types of generators that are far more efficient. And so so I think early on in the process, that's where this language came from, was there was some testimony that that might be beneficial to expand it somewhat.
Yes, I understand.
So in regulations, you fix the or classified engines as qualifying,
Through the
but
chair.
Not generators?
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, that's correct. The way it is now under Section B, When we put that regulation in place, we were mainly targeting engines. We hadn't really thought about the fact that there may be these other improvements out there as well that individuals would like to apply for. And the thing that distinguishes it is the lower interest rate. They can borrow money to buy those things. It's just that we offer a special rate for those engines that are more efficient.
So on the energy efficiency, is any engine that qualifies? If a guy has a Cummins and he's going to put another Cummins in it, or
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, no, we would require that it be more energy efficient. We have a regulation which is fairly broad, but it says it has to be more efficient. And so we actually look at the efficiency rating of the engine that they're purchasing versus the engine that they're replacing. And in almost every case, it's a pretty substantial difference. Just the newer engines are much more efficient.
So because I don't have your regulation in front of me, if I could, Mr. Chairman, get an idea, are you talking a 5% efficiency increase or a 20% or 30%?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Stedman, I could read it to you real quick, but in general, I would say most of them are, you know, in the 20-30% range in terms of more efficient. Some of them actually as high as 40% more efficient. The regulation is actually under 3 AAC 80.055 02, and it says an engine efficiency upgrade efficiency upgrade, an applicant must establish to the satisfaction of the department that the upgrade to be financed with the loan will reduce emissions or improve fuel productivity. So that's the current regulation we have in place, and we don't have a set percentage that they have to meet, but in most cases it's pretty substantial, the ones we've looked at.
Okay, and yes, please, Senator Stedman.
So when you go to compare, I assume, like, if you had a 8-year-old Caterpillar and you're going to buy a new Caterpillar, do you go back to the original consumption specs 8 years ago of that Caterpillar engine, or do you look at the current consumption and wear and tear condition of that?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Stedman, yeah, we do look at the specifications. We also get input from the borrower as well, but we compare the specs of the engine they're replacing with the newer engine.
But the specs that you compare it to is the 8-year-old engine when it was new.
That's correct, through the chair. That's correct, Senator Stedman.
I still got a little concerned that we don't have this thing so broad that they can virtually do anything to their vessel they want. What's the lending capacity available?
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, we have in terms of the funding in the fund itself. We're going to have a balance of about $30 million in there, probably at the end of the fiscal year is what we're projecting. Our annual volume runs anywhere between, you know, 10 and 14 million, somewhere in that area each year.
So there's, if I could,
yes, please.
You know, there is some language, I guess somebody is thinking about some language anyway. Adding another subsection on upgrading vessels and gear for the purpose of improving energy efficiency with a minimum 5% reduction. That seems to me to be extremely low. I understand, you know, a two-stroke to a four-stroke with a fuel consumption spread of 20-40% improvement, or even some of the old four-strokes, which is your Caterpillars and your John Deeres and a few things, versus the two strokes being the Jimmies, even having a broader fuel consumption increase. But this looks like just a standard, any type of hull improvement, any engine change out, seems to me that would qualify.
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, yeah, I don't have the amendment in front of me. And actually, yeah, whatever, I don't have any objection to putting some sort of a limit in there, and what that limit might be would be a policy call. I'm not fixed on any certain percentage, and so the ones we've looked at for the most part are much higher than 5%. So I personally would defer to the sponsor of the bill, but I would have no objection to, if you wanted to put some sort of a criteria in there, that's certainly a policy call on the part of the legislature.
Senator Stevens, do you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to know, Greg, I don't know if you can do this, but can you give us an idea of the what the savings would be, the lower interest rate? Any it may be hard to say that, but is it a couple of percent?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, yeah, the rate, instead of prime plus 2, it's prime minus 2, and we have a floor of 3%. And so it right now, in this interest rate environment, it would mean the difference between a 3% loan and a 5.5% loan because of the 3% floor at this time.
Other questions? This is the second day that this bill's been before us. It does have another referral to the Finance Committee. I would very much like to either get an amendment or move the bill out of committee. What's the will of the body?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we move this out of committee with tasks, fiscal note, and individual recommendations.
Is there any discussion on the motion? Is there any objection to the motion? Okay, bill's moved out of committee. Everyone would sign the recommendation sheet. We did have SB 104 up, and there's the bill sponsor has asked to hold that back for another hearing day, so we're not going to be hearing that today. And with that, we are adjourned.